I'm Kier from In Defense Of, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Chris. You might notice I'm not SP, so my friends, they don't call me SP. You guys don't call me SP. He is out this week. He is on vacation, so he will not be one of our reporters this week. But don't worry, your reporters this week for the 17th episode of Season 4 of the Starling Tribune are Neil.
And she's not Voldemort, and I'm fine.
And of course, I am Chris. So can just anybody walk in here?
It feels like it, doesn't it?
It really does. It's kind of become a running joke I just have to go with. This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, March 31st, 2016, pre-April Fool's Day, live on the Blab streaming service, and will be syndicated out later on YouTube, RSS feeds. We'll be everywhere. If you're not familiar with the show, we're just a couple of guys to discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a reminder that I am sort of a comic expert, and so is Neil.
Rebirth. It's all about Rebirth. Sorry. I got Rebirth on the brain this week.
Oh man, Rebirth looks like it's going to be so good.
So much DC goodness.
For those that don't know what we're talking about, WonderCon, they just announced the entire new slate of DC creative team, and oh man, it looks so good.
Lots of great stuff.
So just a quick reminder, if you've not seen the show before, you've maybe not watched in a while, during this podcast, we'll be talking about what happened in episode 17 of the CW TV show Arrow, as well as news, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past that could impact future episodes. This show will contain spoilers for the current episode, as well as upcoming episodes, so consider yourselves warned. A friendly reminder, all of our past shows can be found in the archives over at GunnaGeek.com. Every show is there. If you want to hear what we thought about season one episodes, head on over there. We'll tell you what we thought. It might be some different members of the Tribune, but the Tribune will tell you what we thought.
They will indeed. And in fact, some of those early episodes are fantastic. And I love when they align with some of the episodes we're watching now. When you just pull it up, you're like, oh, I remember that. And it's relevant.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it happens. You guys were relevant even back in the day.
It sometimes happens. There is a lost episode that will not see the light of day, I'm sure, that was the very first episode of the Starling Tribune with our very own JS. There's a reason it's not coming back out.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. So before we get started recapping this week's episode, talking about the themes, Neil, what can you tell us about it?
Well, this week, the episode was Beacon of Hope, Season 4, Episode 17, original air date Wednesday, March 30th, 2016. The director for this episode, on his 7th episode of Arrow, is director Michael Schultz. I feel like I'm a boxing announcer now. He has 94 different directing credits. 7 episodes of Arrow, 4 of Blackish, 3 of Chuck, 1 of Tomorrow People, and on it goes. The Felicity Show, Ally McBeal, all the way back to the original Starsky and Hutch TV show.
You had me at Chuck. I'm good.
Writers are some of the regular crew. Ben Sokolowski, 23 episodes as a producer on Arrow, 14 episodes as a writer, 20 episodes as a consulting producer on Flash. And Brian Ford Sullivan, this is his 6th episode as a Flash writer. And he was on a writer on all the original 6 episodes of Vixen. And he's now even credited with the first episode of Season 2. So it sounds like that's in the bag.
What do you want to bet he worked on the original Flash episode dealing with our favorite beekeeper?
That would make a lot of sense.
It would.
And that's it.
That's it. Yeah. So I completely lost my spot in the show notes.
You see, SP, you leave us and we don't know what to do.
I'm not used to hosting this show. It's got a different rhythm. I can't fall back on my standard, make an obscure joke and random reference and hit the soundboard. Well, I could hit the soundboard, but it probably wouldn't make any sense.
Fair enough.
So why don't we dig into this episode then before I make a bigger butt out of myself this week? What do you think?
Well, we normally start off by talking about the themes for the episode and see how they link into the title.
I know what the themes are.
Wait.
Bees!
Beacon of Hope. Beacon. Get it?
Oh, man. They just beat that one into my head throughout the show.
They beat it into your head?
Oh, man. Yes. And that was unintended. That's the second time I've done it. But, like, it didn't really hit me that hard. Like, I noticed, I chuckled until Oliver at the end goes, well, I'm just trying to be a beacon. And I went, okay. Too much. You lost me.
So, what was really funny was one of the writers, Brian Ford Sullivan, was live tweeting the episode on the East Coast, and he was tweeting bee puns the entire evening. And then partway through the night, he's like, yeah, folks, we're professional writers. We get paid for this.
So we have one big papa, Stephen John Drew, asking if we can explain the pun. If you need us to explain it, sir, I don't think you should be watching.
And he's gone.
Oh, I didn't mean to make him leave.
The concept of a beacon of hope, and I'm going to drop the bee puns for at least a minute or two here. I mean, Felicity commented that Palmer Tech must become the beacon of hope. And I think Thea actually said it to Ollie that he had to become a beacon of hope. And he, as you said, embraced that at the end and said, you're right, I need to become a beacon of hope. So I think everybody worked it into how they felt they had to position themselves within Star City, which was cool. More light. If they say they're bringing light to the darkness, that beacon, lighthouse, the metaphor even works.
It made me think of the reference of Watchtower from Smallville when they got that. Like, oh, the Watchtower looks out of everything. It is the beacon on the hillside of Metropolis. And I was like, okay, I kind of see it. This was a nice step back from all the melodrama from last week. We still got melodrama, but it was much less prevalent now. And it seems like everyone is ready to move forward past the breakup of the shipped couple of the year.
It's funny that you mention that because last episode, I was not in a happy place. And although are we super fans, Chris? Do we count?
I think we count since we do a podcast about the show. All right. I don't think we have much choice there.
So let's say this. We're super fans, right? We've got the action figures, the Funkos, the comics. We do the podcast. I think we officially count as super fans. There we go. Yep.
Audio listeners, I just held up an Arrow Funko that happens to be sitting right next to my desk.
Given that we're super fans, after the last episode, I had a tough time. I was struggling with how do I stay involved with this show if it's going to be melodrama and relationship drama and out of control emotions, and it overrode what is classically one of my favorite villains, Cupid, on the show. This week, I went into it a bit apprehensive, and I came out of it with a smile on my face. I think they picked it up. They found their pacing again. They remembered what made the show great. Is it all the way back? No. No, but I think this is a good move in the right direction.
I think a good sign was to start the show. We pretty much got an awesome fight scene between Oliver and the rest of Team Arrow. And I was like, okay, this is what we need. A nice palate cleanser. Let's start out with some beatdowns and some fun stuff. I looked at my girlfriend. I went, it's not quite what you want because they all have their shirts on. Because both Diggle and Oliver both had shirts on. But then later in the episode, Oliver took his shirt off, so we were okay for her.
You see, they know how to appease all the fans.
I know, right?
Hey, speaking of fight scenes, you're right. The training fight scene at the beginning was awesome. It was back to training in the Arrow Cave.
Which was a nice touch to see. And then Oliver kind of touching on something about the fact that everyone's rusty. They haven't been fighting like they should be. And Oliver's really got nothing else going on. So he's been training his butt off again, kind of a flashback to season one where he spends all his time in the cave doing the salmon ladder, doing the shadow boxing, getting prepped to go out there and save the city. And he's back to that. And he's kind of like, hey, guys, pick up the slack.
All we need to have him do is throw the bucket of tennis balls again like he did in season one and start shooting the tennis balls out of the air.
We need to start slapping water again.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
Bring back the water.
Yes, water slap.
Hey, but we had a couple of other fights in this episode as well. We had Ollie versus, can we call it Yellow Jacket? Can we?
Marvel might disagree, but I think it works. Okay, so I'll admit that felt a little dumb to me. I was like, if you control thousands of little bee drones, why are you going to turn them into a giant robot for Oliver to fight? Just use the bees and swarm him and kill him.
Because plot!
Yeah, because plot, it was fun to watch and things like that, but it was one of those moments where I went, this is a supervillain not thinking properly of how to win this fight.
Because plot and because it looked cool.
It did look cool. And the costume for the B-Bot or Yellow Jacket in the DC world looked pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it was pretty awesome. And great effects, too. Now,
yes.
Granted, it wasn't an animatronic or it was a guy in a suit, but it was a good-looking suit.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad-looking suit. We've seen some bad suits on TV before. I mean, some of you guys watched The Cape. I know I did.
Before you even said it, I was thinking, oh, he's going to say The Cape.
I cannot live down the fact that I almost watched the entire series on TV before I gave up at like episode 11, I think. So even when there's a bad episode here, I don't feel too bad because I've watched worse. Okay, and Steven in the chat room points out Red Tornado and Supergirl. There's your bad suit. Oh, yeah. Okay, that was probably one of the worst comic adaptations I've seen on TV in the modern era of comic book TV shows.
Yeah, the Red Tornado didn't work. And we've got Michelle Ely in the chat saying she also watched all of The Cape. So, Michelle, our hats off here at the Starling Tribune are off to you.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Hey, we had one more fight on top of that, though. We had Ollie versus the Baron in flashback. So, we're getting some action in the flashbacks again.
It was fun to see, and we're kind of moving forward a little bit with the flashbacks. I feel like we've picked up the pace from being stagnant almost what's going on to at least we're in first gear now.
Yep. I would agree, sir. Now, on the stunt front, we didn't have any awesome motorcycle leaning backwards, flipping, running into buildings like we did last week, but we did have the infamous bee hunt with Curtis in the Arrow Cave as he destroyed the joint.
Curtis had some moves while he was running away, though, too, flipping over chairs and stuff. I was like, not bad.
Yeah, I noticed those as well.
Should we call him Overwatch 2.0?
We can go with that. I think he needs his own name, though.
Firewall.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's not mine. It's what we wanted to call Felicity. Mr. Terrific's probably what it'll end up being, as Cajun Shauna said in the chat room. But when he's in his coordinator role, I like Firewall. If anyone's listening from the Arrow Showriders, you can have that one.
Or he'll just keep saying Terrific over the radio the entire time, and they'll just give him that name, like Cajun Sean said in the chat.
You know what? I'm okay with that, because it was one of those nice moments that if you've read the comics, you're like, ha, nice.
Great. Well, hey, we touched briefly on the flashbacks. I think the fight and Baron von Reiter's use of magic was pretty cool, even though he kind of depleted it at the end. It was the ending of the flashbacks that actually, although it was the darkest point, I think redeemed the flashbacks for me, because Ollie is supposed to be a bit more ruthless when he comes off the island at the end of 5 years.
We're having a hard time right now with the fact that Oliver looks exactly the same on the island as he does in Star City right now. So it's harder to mentally break yourself between those flip-flops in time. I mean, we all made fun of the stupid wig that Stephen Amell was wearing last season. But it served its purpose whenever you saw him in that. It was a mental shift. You could be like, okay, I know we're back in time again. It's an easy cue on that. We don't have that right now. I don't think you have to have it, but we're so used to it. We're like, okay, I need that mental shift to get back in the right mindset. But it was a great touch at the end. We kill them all. I was like, oh, that's right. Oliver's a badass killer back now.
Yep. And I appreciate his perspective, because it doesn't redeem the character. It's like anti-redeeming, but it puts him back on the path to where he should be when he gets off the island at the end of 5 years. Now, yes. Granted, we still have a year of probably Russia. He still hasn't learned Russian. He still hasn't hooked up with the Bratva. It's probably not going to be a gentle Sir Hugs-a-Lot kind of year for Ollie. So we should see more of that.
And he still has to grow his giant beard somehow in less than a year.
He just grows mad facial hair, my friend. Just mad.
There's like some sort of cream that he finds on the island that he rubs into his beard. It's like, whoosh.
It's not a cream if it's on the island. It's a magic herb.
It's a magic. Yeah, he eats the magic herbs and his beard spontaneously grows to be a foot long.
Hey, changing the topic from the Ollie beard report to Ollie himself in this episode. It's his head back in the game in Star City.
I think it is. I think that getting a life lesson from Laurel when he yells at Curtis kind of makes him realize, oh yeah, I'm kind of taking this out on him. He's been talking a big game that episode about being back in the game and how everyone was slacking off, but that seems to be what shifted him back into, okay, I need to save the city. And maybe also partially the fact that Felicity's in danger, because while they aren't together, like he said before, he'll love her forever. So he has to go and save her, and that has to get him back in the mentality of being the Green Arrow.
Yeah, it was actually really good to see. And I cringed a bit when he went that hard at Curtis, and was like, dude, you just kind of unloaded. He needed to hear it. And I'm kind of in between what Laurel said, that you don't, you know, do you want to kick a bag of puppies while you're at it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did go a bit hard, but at the same point in time, he kind of, Curtis's head wasn't in the game.
Well, and he's also taking out his own frustrations. I mean, we know he's frustrated with all the fact that Felicity's gone and the team's not performing as he wants it to, and he probably sees that he himself is not performing how he wants to. So Curtis was the convenient scapegoat to just dump it all out on, and I think he realizes that. That's part of why he apologizes to him later, because Oliver Queen, not a big apologizer in Arrow, and he apologizes here.
Yeah, you know, he's multi-talented, that Oliver Queen guy. And also, for the guy that's supposed to be the master tactician, well, let's just assault the building. Let's run through the bees. Well, that's not going to work, Ollie. No, we'll go. We'll figure it out. We always do.
Just run faster.
You can't do that. And you're right. Ollie got another shirtless scene. I wonder how many are in his contract.
It's got to be contractually obligated at this point in time.
And you mentioned Laurel. Laurel gave him the big speech. I think, now I'm going to say something crazy here. I think the writers and the actor have rehabilitated the character of Laurel. In my eyes, she is all the way there. I respected what she had to say. I think the canary cry is amped up a bit, with Curtis kind of tweaking it a bit. She's a fighter. She's recognized on the street. And she had a good interaction with Ollie. She had absolutely zero chemistry when she put her hand on Ollie's shoulder to console him. Like, it's like you don't really want to touch him. It's like,
those two haven't really had good chemistry on that show. That's part of the issue they'd had with her. But I tend to agree with you. I don't think she's fully rehabilitated yet, but I was also more of a Laurel disliker than you. I think they're getting there. I think having her play the role of Sanity there was good, but in all honesty, I expected it to be Diggle.
I was talking about this with a buddy, and what role does Diggle play? Like, I'm a Diggle fan. I'm a fan of all the major characters in this one, but he kind of slows the plot down now. He is the, let's be more cautious, let's go home to our families. I didn't really need him to do that in this one. The pace has to accelerate, and Diggle slows it down.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more earlier season Diggle, and you're right, he has slowed things down in season 3 and 4 as he's become more cautious, but he's always been Oliver's moral compass. That's why I expected him to be the one that came up to Oliver and said, hey, what are you doing to Curtis here? He's trying to help, because that's been his role, and maybe they're transitioning that into other things, and maybe that's partially to make everyone think, oh, maybe Diggle's in the grave. I don't think that's the case, guys, but it could be just another seed they're trying to plant to make people think that's where they're going.
Yeah, and I'll agree with the people in the chat that I think the relationship, especially with everything, the recent revelation of the fact that not only did he cheat on Laurel, but he cheated on her multiple times and had a kid while they were going out. They can't force the Ollie-Laurel relationship, but if it progresses slowly, naturally over time without any drama for a change, I think it could be really good.
If they're going to do that, they have to do it very, very slowly, because we know how riled up the fan base is for Oliver and Felicity. And I think we've talked about that offline before, how that is potentially a problem for the show. And I don't want to touch on that too much until SP's back, because there's a cool open letter we were talking about before. But they have to be very careful how quick they try and shift Oliver over to being with Laurel. And in part, not necessarily because the fans are going to resent it, but I don't think they have that great a chemistry right now. I mean, people aren't going to buy it.
Agreed.
Say what you want about Alisti, Emily Bett Rickards and Stephen Amell have very good chemistry on screen. And he did have chemistry with Sarah, Michelle brought up in the chat room. That's very true, too. It's just, I don't see that chemistry there with Katie Cassidy, which was in Stephen Amell. And maybe it will develop. And it's going to have to if they want to go down the let's put them in a relationship path. And God, it sounds like a soap opera when I say things like that.
Let's talk about Felicity, because this is one of the first episodes in a long time. She wasn't behind a computer. She wasn't hacking. She was a non-superpowered CEO at Palmer Tech. I think it was a good episode for her. And again, it was relatively free of drama for her, emotional relationship drama. She was going around doing her thing.
It's setting up her new path this week. I mean, she's not going to be on the team. We might see her interact with the team partially, but we already pretty much saw that Curtis is going to become Felicity 2.0, it seems like, even though at the end of the episode, he's kind of hinting at the fact he doesn't want to. But who knows? They need someone to be the tech person. It's not going to be Felicity. So the obvious one seems to be Curtis. I like that they're setting up Felicity for something outside the team, though.
Yeah. And she hinted at that, too, when she, again, coming back to the fact that she thought, yep, they need to, Palmer Tech can be a beacon of hope, and there's lots of things it can do, and it can get this technology into the hands of the people that need it, not just the people that can afford it. So good for her. I think she's got a really cool direction to go from here.
I think so, too.
And I, in the show notes, I put, do you think she's ever going to tell her mom, or is Mama Smoke going to stay in the dark the entire time?
If Quentin is the one in the grave, almost assuredly never. Because that's one more thing her mother has to worry about, is the fact that she's been involved with the Team Arrow stuff after she would be losing the new man in her life. If it's not Quentin in the grave, and it's not Mama Smoke in the grave too, I think we have a chance that it could be revealed at some point. But they have to be very careful, because at this point, everyone knows the secret. So you're running into the same problem you had in season one of Flash, where everyone but Iris knew, and you're just waiting for Iris to find out.
Hey, and speaking of people that have found out, so Curtis, this was the big Curtis reveal week, where you're Oliver Queen, and you're the assistant district attorney, and you, I don't know you.
That was pretty good. It's the worst secured lair ever we have in the chat. Steven is going, hey, why don't they put in locks? And your guess is as good as mine. You just kind of have to wave your hand, and the door opens, and then it releases you into the Arrow Cave, and everyone stares at you instead of diving for their masks or anything.
Or shooting you with an arrow.
Or shooting you with a Trank arrow or a Trank bullet. I mean, Diggle could have shot him with a Trank bullet almost immediately. But then you wouldn't have had your tech genius to help out this episode.
Yeah, and they know Curtis. Curtis is a good guy, so... But, yeah. Worst secured lair ever.
Oh, I know, right?
And he has a long way from the comic book Mr. Terrific with the T-spheres. Heck, Felicity blew up the T-spheres this week.
It's because they're ineffective communication devices right now.
Wonderful localized explosives, though.
Oh, yeah, they did their job, and they didn't blow back anything on the people that were on the elevator. That was the problem I was expecting, was, oh, man, there's a wall there. There's going to be some kind of blowback, isn't there?
That's not how explosions work. Oh, well, that's awesome. The only question I have is his little comment at the ending to his husband, where he says, you know, I see the risks, I see the danger, and I'm happy being right here. It's like they're saying he gets it, and after all this, no, he's not going to don the mask. He's not going to go and put himself in harm's way. So do you think he is going to become the tech genius? I'm not sure.
I think that's going to be eventually. This is his first taste of it and kind of wants to stay out of it for the sake of his family. But eventually, Oliver's going to need him to do something. They're going to need help to do something. And gradually, similar to what you saw with Felicity in season one, he's going to get pulled in more and more until he realizes, I want to help them do this. I want to help make Star City better. There's where your soap opera element comes in, as he and his husband, and the conflict that arises over the fact that you come home from work and then you leave until 3 a.m. and stuff like that.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that, because the relationship that he had with his husband has been solid, grounded, loving, no drama. And it's like, we need more of those positive relationship roles. I guess we have Layla and Diggle as well.
I agree with you. I'm starting to get a little jaded because of all the relationship drama we've had lately in Arrow. And I'm hoping it is not the case, because the relationship drama is not my big draw to the show. The cool fight scenes and awesome effects and things like that, that's what pulls me in.
Agreed. Now, hey, how awesome would a Malcolm and Damian Dark buddy cop road trip movie be?
Yes! We have to kickstart this immediately.
Those two have great chemistry. That's the relationship I want to see on screen.
That would be fun.
And pulling back all the stops with a season 2 villain with his mouth sewn shut in Iron Heights.
That was cool.
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
I like getting callbacks like that, though. If you've been watching, you'll remember this. And you're like, oh, yes!
Ollie put him in there. He doesn't like the Arrow.
But he might like the Green Arrow, because remember, the Arrow is dead.
Oh, that's right. It's a totally different Archer in green with a hood. Totally different Archer.
He's got exposed biceps now.
It can't be him.
That's how he got stung.
Sleeves, Oliver. Sleeves, damn you.
Bring back the sleeves.
Oh, that's our hashtag for the episode. Bring back the sleeves.
This shouldn't make me laugh that hard.
So Malcolm and Damien, though, we get some chemistry in prison, and everybody's got a side agenda. And I think I called it a few weeks ago that I don't think Hive is the biggest Damien Dark fan, because every time he got mad at somebody, he force choked them over the screen or in the same room or did something. And sure enough, Malcolm comes right out and says it. Is, you have been killing people in the organization that do not agree with you, and they're happy to let you rot. Like, see? That's exactly what I would expect.
Just imagine what would have happened had Kylo Ren or Darth Vader been captured by the Resistance or the Rebels. Be the same boat.
Yeah, and appealing to all the Super Star Destroyer captains.
Go save Lord Vader, he's going to choke you. Well, he's not here to choke me now, so hell with him.
And I only got promoted because he force choked the three guys ahead of me. I'm not giving this up.
I'm not giving this gig up. This is solid now.
I got three promotions in a week. This is awesome. Yeah, Vader's staying in prison for a while. And so, in theory, is Damien Dark.
I love how we just tied Star Wars to Arrow. Oh, man.
Man, it happens. And the ending, I think, where we see younger Diggle linked in with Damien Dark pulling some strings on the outside of prison. And I think that's the problem. That guys like this, guys like Kingpin and Damien Dark, people that end up in prison that still have a big network, lots of charisma and inherent power, they're still going to have an influence on the outside world. And we see that, especially with the reference to the guy's grandmother. So, yeah, he's away but not forgotten.
Did anyone really think we could trust Andy, though? For real?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that the wrong thing to say?
It seemed too convenient to me. Now, I understand, like Michelle says, I had hope. I was hoping that wasn't the case, but Damien Dark and Hive has wheels within wheels on things, and yeah, I had a bad feeling.
Oh, okay. So, wheels within wheels. Then is our political intern, publicist, PR booty call guy going to work for Ruvay? Is that because he already works for Ruvay? Is he still a deep, deep, deep cover plant, or is he just a guy looking for a job and there's only one person running for mayor?
I think it's option B, because it would... I mean, we saw this happen with DJ Dude last season. I don't see it happening again, because it's just too predictable in the grand scheme of things. Now, I could be wrong.
We need SP back here, because I think he's the only one that believes the double agent political intern booty call guy's conspiracy theory. I think that if you're a political consultant and there's only one person running for mayor, it's probably only natural, if you want a job, that you go try to work with that person.
Yeah, but how much do they really need a campaign manager if there's nobody else running? I mean,
you'll probably work for cheap.
Work for peanuts, I say. Peanuts!
Oh, listen, we had some other characters that were in this episode. We had Thea not acting crazy. We had Mama Smoke being cute and hanging out with Thea and Felicity. And we had Captain Lance not really doing anything material, but hanging out with Curtis and crushing the bee. And
he has seen Independence Day. Don't forget that.
So before we roll on to what very little news we have and some of the Easter eggs, does this change who's in the grave, Chris?
No, I don't think that changes it at all. It's still Captain Lance, I think.
Yeah, I gave up on my conspiracy theory last week. Oh, we forgot one person, and we forgot our patented supervillain, how bad is our baddie scale of 1 to 10. So,
I don't believe I can do this properly.
Oh, behave, sir. Behave.
Oh, my. She's 4.
Bug-eyed bandit?
Yeah, I don't know.
4.5?
Yeah, I think that might be stretching it.
She did kill somebody, but it was just a guy in a suit. You know what? For the first time in known record, let it be known, totally agreeing with you, sir. She doesn't break 5. I'll give her 4 or 4.5. Bug-eyed bandit, you have failed this podcast.
I think hell froze over.
Yeah, it happens. It's not like she took out an entire Argus base and didn't break 5. Chris.
That's just because they were lame. They were lame, I say. Lame! Send your hate mail to chris@gunnageek.com.
That's right. All right, so next week's episode is 11:59. The air date is going to be April 6th, and it seems like a highly dramatic episode. We will probably see who gets killed in it. Oliver and Diggle find out Merlin want to break Dark out of prison, Laurel gets a surprise, and Felicity has a talk with Curtis. So the official synopsis is pretty light, but if you watch the trailers and the promos that came out, a lot of high drama in this one.
I don't think we're going to get the death. I think they're going to set it up so it could be like one of three people and we don't get the death until next week.
Agreed. I think what's even more exciting is the promo picks for next week have started coming out.
Ooh.
Yes. If you haven't checked them out, the link is in the show notes. What I really like is Malcolm going sword to sword with Thea in the Arrow Cave. So yes, he still knows where it is, and he is dressed up in his Dark Archer getup. Looking forward to it. There we go. In the Blab interface.
Fancy, fancy.
Yep.
So we'll have to see what happens next week then. But before we get to next week's episode, I think we got to talk Easter eggs for this week's episode.
That's true. Now, I think it's been fair that if we go through the comicbook.com articles online that we've been looking at in past weeks, there have been some references that are more pop culture. So yet again, I think the name of the segment is going to evolve from DC Easter eggs to DCN pop culture Easter eggs.
DC and geek culture Easter eggs or something like that.
That works. I'm okay.
I like it.
There were a lot of movie references in this one. We had Holy Frack coming from Felicity in this one. We had references to the Borg made in this world. We had references to John Hurt and Alien with the chest bursters. We had references to my favorite scene from My Girl with the Macaulay Culkin film where he's stung to death by bees. We had Independence Day's references and reference to Bee Arth.
Oh, ho, ho. So let's move into some of the things that we've seen before, but we should touch on them again because they are callbacks. Iron Heights Prison comes back. It's the prison that Moira was held in, Barry's father was held in. Pretty much if you're a big bad on Flash and Arrow, who is not a meta, you go to Iron Heights Prison. Brought up Hive again, of course, that Damien Dark is running. Brought up Palmer Tech again, because we see that all the time since Felicity's in charge. And don't forget, Baron Ryder seems to be an updated version of the DC villain, Baron Blitzkrieg.
Yes. Now, of course, our villain for this week was Bree Larvin, the Bug-Eyed Bandit. So in the DC universe, Bug-Eyed Bandit is not female. He's a guy with a big, pointy, stinger-like black goatee. He does control bees. I like the CW universe update of Bree Larvin. So ripped out of the pages of DC, where actually in the comics, a Bug-Eyed Bandit is an Atom villain. So a nice change.
Ooh. So next up is the date that was referenced. In post-production, they knew just when this episode was going to air. According to the first scene with Bree Larvin, she got out of jail yesterday. So this whole episode would have taken place today.
Yep. That won't date at all.
No.
My quote from the beginning of this episode of the Starling Tribune was the reference to Voldemort. So yes, you know, and again, it reminded me of the scene from Captain America, or the last Captain America movie, where he's crossing pop culture references off his list, and all he said, they've made movies.
Right, and if you get a chance, Lord Mesa, who does a lot of the cool artwork and things like that for Arrow, did a really, really cool artwork piece of Oliver on the island reading Harry Potter books that he found in a trunk. It is hilarious. I encourage you strongly to go see it. I'll try and dump it into the Blab interface here in a sec, too. See, next up, Murmur is mentioned. Michael Amar, who previously appeared in the season 2 episode, The Offer, was imprisoned for confessing to a crime he didn't commit after being beaten by police and served out his sentence in Iron Heights prison. He was released from prison and had his mouth sewn shut, then went on a roaming rampage against the officers who beat the false confession out of him. Amar and his crew attacked the Starling City Police Department, killing several cops. Nissa Al Ghul, the Arrow, and Arsenal stopped their crew before he could escape, and he ended up back in Iron Heights.
The next reference, and Curtis has made this reference before, when he thought he had figured out who Arrow was, he says, I thought it was Neil Adams from Data Processing. Neil Adams is one of the most iconic Green Arrow creators. Most of the classic Green Arrow references were Neil Adams. I can't disagree with his choice in first name either, so glad to see that one.
We had the arrow cave referenced again, but this time Ollie said it's the bunker.
I kind of like arrow cave, but yes, I'll take bunker.
I like arrow cave too, just because it plays off the whole bat checklist thing.
And it'll never be gone. There was a reference in this episode to the Dodger and International Jewel Thief. He's been referenced a couple of times back in season one. So yeah, another throwback.
And then finally, we talked about it before. Curtis says Terrific a lot, which might be a reference to his comic alter ego, which is Mr. Terrific.
That's a whole lot of geek and pop culture references in this show.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff this week.
It was a solid week.
It was solid. So we did have one news article about Steven and Robbie Amell's Indiegogo crushing its target. They got $355,000. Their target was $200,000. Now, I don't know anything about it because I suck.
So, and in fact, they raised their $355,000 in 9 days. It is still going on. There's still 22 days left. If you've been following Steven on his Facebook account, they're trying to come up with new perks. And he actually had to come out and say, I'm very sorry, but we can't have Arrow set visits because this is not an Arrow production. This is a Robbie and Steven Amell production. It's a dystopian future. So Beef from Legends Podcast would love this, where there are superhumans in a dystopian future. The police are going after them. I think Steven is one of the the executive producer and director on it, and the star from all the trailers, and there's a great 10-minute trailer available. One of the stars is Robbie. So definitely check it out. You can check it out on Indiegogo. You can check it out on YouTube. And they're passionate about this project.
They are indeed. There was actually an outside the news. There was a good interview this week where Comic Book Resources interviewed John Barrowman talking about his character, Malcolm Merlyn. Here's the big quote to talk about. Barrowman says, Malcolm has everyone's best interests at heart, although he might not go about what he does in the proper way. We've kind of seen that with Thea, but I don't know that he necessarily has Oliver or Diggle or Laurel's best interests at heart.
Yeah, he says a few controversial things in this one. He says that he actually considers Malcolm the most misunderstood hero in Star City. And he doesn't have a team of people around him to make him think what he's doing is okay, but he's really a good guy.
Well, he did have a team. Oliver just took it away.
Yeah. And I think we can probably admit that Malcolm does things for himself in most cases. Yeah. And another quote that he said is, one thing that I've tried to get across with looks or looks in my eye, it's the little things I do that lets people know that Malcolm actually does care about the team.
Yeah, sort of, kind of, not really.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Oh, John. You know what? Malcolm Merlyn is the ultimate manipulator, and I think that John Barrowman is just having fun with this, honestly.
I tend to agree with you. John Barrowman likes to have fun with his fans and with the media, so I think that could be the case here. So, one last story we need to touch on. We always talk about the comics and the toy news. There's some big news that came out of WonderCon this past weekend, all about DC's Rebirth initiative. And Neil, what have you got about Green Arrow's Rebirth?
Well, so this is a question. I think in the New 52, the Green Arrow comic struggled with popularity. There were some really good storylines, and there were some pretty poor storylines. There was, as we went into the DCU, YOU, the reboot, post-convergence last year, they dropped some of the storylines that they had in New 52, but I think it's fair to say that the series still hasn't really found its footing. Well, with Rebirth, and remember that the whole reason they're doing Rebirth is they're trying to bring back a link to this rich DC history. DC has some of the most iconic characters in all of literature, and with New 52 and New You, they had lost a lot of that. So they're going back to roots. And one of the things that really affected me with Green Arrow is that the relationship with Black Canary was gone. It was retconned out. And he was a younger Ollie, and Ollie's always been a bit older too. He's been a bit more mature, a bit more, I wouldn't say jaded, but a bit more weary at times. And we're going back to a slightly older Ollie. We're getting Ollie and the Black Canary in the first issue. And more importantly, he's coming back with the goatee.
Nice.
Now, this week on Comixology, all of the Rebirth specials and number ones went up for pre-order. The writer is going to be Benjamin Percy, and the art is going to be by Otto Schmidt. I've seen some of Otto's work before. It's fantastic. Ben Percy was actually writing some of the New 52 stuff, so it's going to be interesting to see what they're doing with this. Also, remember, one of the big pushes in Rebirth is that they have dropped the price point on all their books to $2.99. So instead of $3.99 or $4.99, everything is $2.99, but most titles, including Green Arrow, are shipping twice a month now.
Now, do remember they did draw the line at $2.99 before, and that lasted for like 6 months. So maybe I'm being slightly cynical there, but hopefully it sticks this time. You mentioned the whole Rebirth thing. The whole announcement that was coming out of WonderCon was really interesting. There's some awesome creative team shakeups. The only thing that really bums me out, we knew it was happening, is that Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder are not working together on Batman right now. But the nice consolation prize, Scott Snyder and John Romita Jr. doing All-Star Batman. I am super intrigued. Romita Jr. is one of my favorite artists. I loved his work on The Amazing Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe, and I cannot wait to see him doing a Batman book with, wow, Scott Snyder. I almost called him Zack Snyder.
You don't say that. Please don't say that.
I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
And what I was excited about, we talked about this briefly before we started recording this evening, is Greg Rucka doing Wonder Woman. That is going to be awesome.
Hey, I'm really excited for that.
And they put a bunch of A-listers as well. Oh, Dan Abnett on Aquaman, which is also twice a month now. So a twice monthly Aquaman book with top tier talent on it. Now, if you're a Marvel fan, Dan Abnett's been writing a lot of stuff over Marvel recently. He's very famous for writing a ton of Warhammer 40K novels. Most of the great early Horus Heresy books are all Dan Abnett stuff. So that's going to be really interesting for them to hype Aquaman that much.
Well, they kind of have to, because we know he's coming as one of the next DC movies. And Aquaman's kind of a punchline at times. You can sometimes blame the cartoons and things like that, because it's real easy to make fun of the guy that just talks to the fishes.
Yeah.
It happens. As we wrap things up, this is generally the point in the show, rather, where we talk to you about some of the other awesome content available on the Gunna Geek Network. By that, I mean, we've got 18 shows on the Gunna Geek Network. We've got all sorts of different things, regardless of what your tastes are. But this week, we want to talk to you about episode 18 of the In Defense Of podcast, entitled, What? That Again? In this episode, they discuss TV and movie reboots, reinterpretations, and rehashes of material you've already seen. Now, there are some strong opinions when it comes to reboots. I'm going to have to go and listen to this one, especially if the rumor is true and we're looking at a third Battlestar Galactica reboot.
I actually just listened to it a couple of days ago. The great thing about Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio's In Defense Of cast is that he has a rotating crew of different people with opinions or a bit of expertise in these fields. And I actually know one of the indie film producers, writers, and directors that he has on this episode, a guy by the name of Jeff Richards. So really fantastic, really insightful, worth listening to.
Totally is. I'm going to have to go and check it out. It's on my list of things to do. And I have a 45-minute commute, so I can get caught up on my podcasts soon, I hope. But we are going to start wrapping things up now. A big thank you to everyone who joined us live today, everyone who downloads the podcast, anyone who might have watched the replay on YouTube or even on Blab. Having you guys be a part of the show is fantastic and awesome for us.
Yes, definitely. And I just want to say thank you, especially to all the live participants in our Blab chat. If you'd like to join the fun, join in live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im, and just search for Star League Tribune. And don't forget that after the show, we always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts on this week's episode of Arrow and all the geeky goodness. You can watch the next show live on the Gunna Geek Network over at geeks.live. The next live show is going to be the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, with our very own Chris.
That would be me. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. If you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. We love getting great reviews. You can also like us on Facebook, follow the channel on YouTube, and badger us on Twitter. Basically, please rate, review, and subscribe if you have the chance. And don't forget, you can find all of our contact information over on the Gunna Geek Network, over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. While you're there, check out the forums, check out one of the other awesome shows on the network. And to wrap things up with you guys, if you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or best of all, give us a call at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Chris, my friend, it was fun hanging out and talking out some Arrow. I think that just about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up Blab to our live listeners? At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag waterslap.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag we can link anything to Star Wars. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.
Do, do, do. We did connect that to Star Wars, and that was so cool. I can't believe we did it.
We can do it with anything. You can do it.
I honestly think that is quite possible.
Yeah.
So the thing I did find out, since we're in post show, I can embed this image while we're doing the live show, because you can just drop any link in if you're a host and it'll display it, including YouTube videos. This does not carry over to the recorded version. So when I put this on YouTube, when I was dropping the links in for the news stories and stuff, it'll show up when it's live, but any replay on Blab or on YouTube does not include any of those things that are dropped in. They are supposedly working on that, but that would be huge.
That'd be awesome.
The other thing that's really cool and I wish we'd thought of is when they're doing the DC Rebirth announcement, you can drop a YouTube video in here. We could have had four people discussing the Rebirth announcement live and turned down the volume on it when something cool was happening to discuss it. Now we would have to use alternative methods to capture that video, because when it went live, it would just be four talking heads, not the Rebirth stuff. But I think Blab has a lot of cool opportunities going forward for doing commentary on major announcements, like the Tesla announcement going on right now. If they had a YouTube stream for it, you could toss that in there and you could have four talking heads geeking out over the Tesla stuff.
Ooh, I wonder if they're doing anything on May 4th this year. Any announcements on Star Wars Day?
They've got to.
Yeah.
They've got to. Oh. Uh-oh, we have a caller.
No,
it is one.
Don't Steven. Take it. Lock
Big
the seat.
Papa John Drew.
Lock it.
We can't hear him, though, so we're good. You're very, very low.
I heard
very
something.
Very low. And he's wearing an Avengers shirt on our DC podcast.
It's a DC podcast, sir. What are you doing? Nope.
Well, I can't hear you still. Did you select the right microphone when you came in the Blab?
Nope.
He's just rage.
Nope.
Did we hang up on him by accident, or did he shut himself down?
I didn't touch it.
I still cannot hear you. You are super, super, super low.
Is your mic on? That's a good looking mic you got there.
I'm
sir.
Glad this is the post show, so we don't have to feel as asinine during the regular
You'd
show.
You'd be like I felt before we actually got going tonight.
Man, stuff like that happens. We countered it.
Yeah.
And I'm literally just filling time until Steven can get here.
Yeah. Steven, we had tech issues with my new Zoom UIC 2. So tell me if the audio was clipping in the clip that I sent you for the... Oh, no, that wasn't...
Steven is most certainly not clipping at all.
He's like anti-clipping. Hang on, I'll give him props. There we go.
You still there, Steven?